United States against Griffin. Mr. Alvarado.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rob Alvarado. I'm an assistant federal public defender for the Central District of Illinois. I represent Joseph Griffith, defendant appellant. First of all, Your Honor, a word regarding the standard of review in this case. When we submitted the briefs in this case, the government and myself, we had noted that the standard for review for an upward departure, or a downward departure for that matter, under Coon would be for an abuse of discretion. I believe last month the President signed the PROTECT Act, which, among other things, included a provision that stated that all departures, whether upward or downward, would be reviewed de novo, and we believe that that is the standard to apply in this case.
You complained, you know, in your brief that the court didn't give prior indication of its intent.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm sorry. In your brief, you complained that the court didn't give prior indication of its intent to depart upward. Did you object to the departure once the court announced?
Your Honor, we never claimed that we didn't receive proper notice that the court might depart upward. My point in the brief was that the government did not request an upward departure, therefore there wasn't a proper framing of whether an upward departure was warranted under the circumstances through the adversarial process.
Yeah, but my question is this. Once the court announced, I am departing upward, did you object then?
Your Honor, I did not state those words, I object. In fact, I believe when the district court announced his decision, the first thing he did was ask whether there had been an appeal waiver, because he fully expected and was inviting an appeal in this case. And so when the judge began ruling on the matter, I felt there was no point in stating anything more than what I had already stated on the record.
Well, then wouldn't we review this case for plain error in any case? That's what I'm trying to
say. Well, and I do agree. I think that it was plain error, and the court should find it to be so. And if I had stated the words, I object, I think that, of course, procedurally, that would have made a difference, but practically, it would have made no difference at all in the argument that I would have raised. In fact, let's go to that issue, because that's really the crux of the matter, whether the court properly applied the upward departure here. The reason the court departed upward was not tied directly to the reason in the guidelines that gives him the power to grant an upward departure. And let me point that out. The base level for this offense was 17. There were 18 levels of offense characteristics that were imposed in addition to that base level. A 5-level increase is what's at issue here. And that was for the defendant engaging in a pattern of activity involving the sexual abuse or exploitation of minors. Now, under the guidelines, that pattern of activity is specifically defined as two or more instances of sexual abuse or exploitation. Application Note 2 of that guideline states that a departure upward may be imposed if the court finds that the pattern of activity, if the sexual exploitation or abuse, does not adequately reflect the seriousness of the sexual abuse or exploitation involved. Now, what I suggest to the court is that pattern of sexual abuse or exploitation is what's underrepresented, and that's what gives the power to the district court to impose an upward departure, if that sexual exploitation or abuse was underrepresented by the 5-level increase.
Well, Mr. Griffith has 2 prior convictions for sexually abusing children, but never served more than 6 months for either of those crimes. How would it be error to find that his criminal history category underrepresents the seriousness of his past offenses. Will the record tell us why those sentences were so short?
No, Your Honor. No, they wouldn't. In fact, there was only a very brief description in the pre-sentence report of those offenses themselves. But that's not what the court said specifically when it was granting the upward departure. In fact, the court said almost everything else but the nature of the sexual abuse and exploitation of those two cases, because it was those two cases alone that supported the five-level increase, which we did not contest. What we're saying is that anything above that five-level increase must be supported in the record by evidence that that sexual exploitation and abuse was not adequately reflected by the five-level increase. What did the court say? Well, the district court said that the photographs that were involved in this case were the most serious that it had seen in its 35 years of law enforcement experience, which may very well be the case, Your Honor. But those facts were taken into account in the base level and in the 18 levels that were assessed as part of the offense characteristics.
You know, the government pointed out that the two-level increase in criminal history yields the same sentencing range as a two-level increase in the offense level would have. Doesn't that moot your argument that the court, you know, erred in increasing the criminal history category?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the government is correct. The court could have gone either way.
Right.
It could have granted a two-level increase in the offense level or a two-level increase in the criminal history category. But I think, well, first of all, I think it is more correct that other decisions, not of the Seventh Circuit, but in other circuits, have found that it was more proper to impose an offense level increase as opposed to criminal history category increase. But we're not talking about a general level of the criminal history category underrepresenting this man's criminal behavior. What we're talking about is a very specific thing, and that is whether this upward departure in the application note, which states that the did the five-level increase adequately assess sexual abuse and exploitation involved in this case, that that has not been shown by the district court or by the government.
See, I don't know how you get past some of the facts of the case, which, you know, you've got Mr. Griffin himself admitting that, you know, the treatment wasn't working for him, and that really he was unable to control himself. I mean, it's terribly sad, but, you know, and with this sentence, he'll still be pretty young, you know, from my vantage point. When he gets out of prison, he'll be in his mid-50s. And at that point, he will still be dangerous by his own admission.
Your Honor, I would respectfully suggest that whether he is still dangerous at the point of time of his release does not suggest the proper reason to impose the upward departure. The upward departure must be tied to whether the sexual abuse or exploitation that was already assessed a five-level increase was adequate or not.
Why? The guidelines specifically say that if the criminal history calculation does not fully reflect the probability of recidivism, that the criminal history level may be raised. And that was the conclusion the district judge reached, that this criminal history didn't fully reflect the probability of recidivism. It looks like the very thing that the Sentencing Commission invited district judges to do. What's wrong with it?
Your Honor, I don't believe that that is the basis for the court's upward departure, not strictly for criminal history category. It was specifically because of Application Note 2 in 2G2.2, the point that the probation office had specifically identified in the PSR as a reason for an upward departure. And I think that had the government requested an upward departure and stated the ground...
The prosecutor doesn't have to request upward departures.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. But what I'm stating is if the government had, then the issue could have been framed in such a way that we would know exactly what the court's basis for the upward departure was, what the grounds were and whether the upward departure itself was reasonable in light of all the facts.
And you think that this judge made that awfully clear?
No,
You know, the judge is saying, look, I've been around for 35 years. I've seen a lot of this. This is the worst. You don't hear that a whole lot.
No, I agree, Your Honor, but I don't think that the court adequately explained the basis for its upward departure so that this court can objectively review it, especially since the court is reviewing de novo.
No, we aren't reviewing de novo. We're reviewing for plain error.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one reason why it didn't explain more fully is precisely that there wasn't any objection at the time. Very hard for the Court of Appeals to say, you know, we blame the district court for not explaining when no explanation was requested.
Your Honor, for all the reasons I've stated, we would request that the court remand this case for resentencing for an adequate explanation of the basis or for a determination that no upward departure would be warranted.
Thank you, Mr. Alvarado. Mr. Chambers.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kate Chambers and I represent the United States of America in this appeal. Your Honors, I would love to have the plain error standard this morning as I stand before you, but I can in good conscience argue waiver in this case. Judge Mim made it very clear, and I think everyone in that courtroom understood, that he turned to me and he said, listen, if there's an appeal waiver in this plea agreement, then I'm not going to take the plea agreement because I want him to have the right to take it up. There was no plea agreement.
That's completely unrelated to the question that Judge Roebner and I have been asking. Nobody thinks there's an appeal waiver. The question is whether a claim of error was properly preserved in the district court by alerting the district judge to the ground now being raised here.
Well, that's true, but it appeared to me as I sat there in the courtroom that the judge understood that he was objecting to the upward departure. He didn't say those words, but I thought it was clear in the courtroom that the judge was objecting to that he understood that Mr. Alvarado was objecting.
What
to
made you think this?
Because, Your Honor, he wouldn't have accepted, he wasn't going to go forward unless he had that ability to bring that to this court. Unless he had that ability to bring these issues before this court.
Bring to this court all issues that have been preserved in the district court. The lack of an appeal waiver doesn't excuse the lack of a timely objection in the district court or the lack of argument. Right? There's no if a defendant goes to trial, there's no appeal waiver, but somebody who doesn't object to the jury instructions can't argue that on appeal. Appeal waivers and whether an issue is properly raised are totally unrelated.
Under either standard, under the plain error standard or under the de novo standard after the Protect Act. Either way, there's a sufficient basis for what Judge Mim did in this case.
I do want to ask you something. In part, the court relied on Mr. Griffith's potential to commit other crimes against children in departing upward. But child abusers are notorious for recidivism. How can we say, then, that the guidelines didn't already take this potential into account? Because it's such a well-known, trait of child abusers.
Your Honor, I think you have to add everything together. First, let me state, we don't believe the judge made his departure under the note to 2G2.2 that Mr. Alvarado made reference to. We believe this is a pure heartland upward departure under 5K2.0, and there he looked at the several factors. One, the photographs, which is, of course, read the description of the photographs, they're horrific. Then he looked at the fact that he had created this website, and he was actually he had created a market for similar photographs out there. And then he looked at the fact that he'd had these two prior violent sexual abuse of children convictions. And then, and only then, do we get to the three failed attempts at rehabilitation. And when you add all that together, we think that does clearly take it outside of the heartland. And once you have it outside of the heartland, the question is, where did he go with it then? Now, he could have done the offense levels, two up. That would have been a more possibly traditional way of doing it, but he didn't. He led the criminal history range 2 up, but as the court noted, and as we set out in our brief, the result is the same, the exact same. So he used the framework of the guidelines, and he justified the amount of the departure based upon all the factors we set out in the brief. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you very much. Case taken under advisement.